ॐ गणतमिरन्दस्य जनजनशलाकाय चक्षुसुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं उपकलमयं ददति सर्वम् पञ्चकौपितृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितरं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः Today, Krishna willing, we shall begin the prayers of Lord Brahma. Keep in mind that Brahma is the chief engineer, as Prabhupada said, of the universe. That means he is, to say he's extremely intelligent is an obvious understatement. Because when we look at the universe, or we look at anything within the universe, we see how incredibly complicated it ultimately is. Everything is so complicated, from the smallest of things to the greatest of things. So who has assembled all this? This is Lord Brahma. What incredible intelligence he must have, he must possess. He is fixed in knowledge. And before Brahma, who is standing with his hands folded and trembling, is Lord Krishna, who is a little boy, a little coward boy. And on his head, he has a peacock feather, his skin is darkish like a monsoon cloud. He's carrying a stick for cowherding. He has a flute of buffalo horn. His skin sometimes is covered, smeared with the minerals of the Vrindavan forest, but especially he is a little boy. Although very, very, very beautiful, he is very little. And yet, as we shall hear, Brahma is going to respect him, this little boy, Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything. Everything, including he himself, including all the Vishnu forms. Indeed, he has just seen this with his own eight eyes. He has seen that these Vishnu forms, unlimited Vishnu forms, had emanated from Krishna. He has seen this. And he has understood his own potency in comparison to Krishna's potency. And therefore, trembling, he is approaching Krishna with prayers. The first, I'll read the first eight prayers because they comprise a section. Please listen carefully. And I may speak a little bit, but let's get an understanding of how this section of verses is proceeding. His first words, Nomidyate Abhra Vapushatadit Ambaraya Gunjavatamsa Paripichalasan Mukaya Vanyasraje Kavalavetra Vashana Venu Lakshmasriye Mridupade Pashupangajaya. Very, very sweet. And this is one of the most descriptive verses in the Bhagavatam of Krishna's beauty. Brahma's words. Brahma Uvacha. Nomi. Brahma says, Nomi. I offer praise. Idya. O most worshipful one. Nomidyate Abhra Vapusha. Abhra, like a dark cloud. Vapusha, whose body is like a dark cloud. I'm offering you praise. O most worshipful one. So he, again, is calling Krishna, this little boy, the most worshipable one. Abhravapash, His body is like a dark cloud. Tadit. Anyone know what tadit means? It means lightning. Tadit ambaraya, whose garments are like lightning in color. Effulgently bright yellow. Skin is darkest, and contrasting that are his effulgent yellow garments. And what else is he wearing? Gunja of a tamsa. Paripicha. He's wearing earrings and ornaments made out of gunja berries. Those black, white, and reddish berries that are found in Vrindavan, that are favorite decorative ornaments of Krishna and the cowherd boys and the other and the gopis. They blossom, or they come into their seeds. They're actually seeds, and they come in out of their pods, out of their seed pods, perhaps just several months ago, in the seasons of Vrindavan. Just 1 month ago, perhaps. So this is how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is dressed. His beauty is being described, ornaments of gunja, berries, not emeralds and rubies and diamonds, but gunja berries. Quite amazing. Because he is, again, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the supreme possessor of all wealth. Sadaishwarya Purna. All opulences are his completely. And his paripicha with a peacock feather. And he's lasat resplendent with this mukaya whose face vanya srajay. And he's wearing a garland of forest flowers. But incredibly attractive and incredibly beautiful, with his effulgent lightning cloth and his darkest complexion and these different ornaments. And Kavala, this is a decoration practically. In his left hand is a morsel of the food that he was carrying as he was searching for the cowherd boys. Not even in his right hand, in his left hand. And Vetra, Vashana, Venu. Three V's. Vetra, a stick. Vashana, a buffalo horn bugle. And Venu, a flute. Sreyi, his beauty. This is the characteristics. All these wonderful decorations were characteristics of his incredible beauty. And the most beautiful part of Krishna is his beautiful face, which isn't really being described here. And the most beautiful part of Krishna's face is his beautiful mouth and his dancing eyes and his dancing eyebrows. Everything is the perfection of beauty. It is the source of all beauty. And he has all these as ornaments because he is a cowherd boy. And Mridupade, Pashupa. Mridupade means his feet are very, very, very soft because of his tender childhood. So beautiful and so soft and reddish tinged on their soles. Pashupa Angajaya. So he's offering his respects to the Pashupa. Angujaya, to the son of the Pashupa, unto the son of Nanda Maharaj, who is the king, the cowherd, the king of the cowherds. So he is offering praise unto him by describing his beauty. Here is the translation. My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the supreme personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. O son of the king of cowards, your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud that's filled with rains. Your garment, your dhoti is brilliant, effulgent like lightning. And the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunji earrings and the peacock feather on your head. Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves and equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn and a flute, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. O son of the king of the cowherds. This is a respectful worship offered to him. Instead of going through all eight verses in this section, I'll read the purport here. In the previous chapter, Brahma, the creator of the universe, tried to bewilder the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, by stealing his cowherd boyfriends and calves. But by a slight exhibition of Krishna's own mystic potency. So immediately, we're getting an understanding or some glimpse, even though it is from a distance, some glimpse of the unlimited power that this little boy possesses. Unlimited power. That concept is in and of itself inconceivable. How can we conceive of unlimited power? But there he is, dressed in this way, in his beautiful way, like a forest boy. But by a slight exhibition of Krishna's own mystic power, Brahma himself was completely bewildered. And now, with great humility and devotion, he offers his humble obeisances and prayers unto the Lord. The word kavala in this verse refers to a morsel of rice mixed with yogurt that Krishna held in his left hand. According to Sanatana Goswami, the Lord held a cowherding stick and a buffalo horn pressed under his left arm, and his flute was placed under his belt. Beautiful young Krishna, decorated with multicolored forest minerals, exhibited opulence far greater than those of Vaikuntha. Although Brahma had seen innumerable forearm forms of the Lord, when did he see those? Because all the cows and boys had turned into these. So he's seen these. And he now surrendered unto the supreme feet, to the lotus feet of the two-armed form of the Lord, who appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj. Brahma offered his prayers to that form. Even though he had witnessed personally the four-armed Vishnu forms, he understood the position of Krishna as the source, Krishna stu Bhagavan Sayam, as the source of those Vishnu forms. Naturally, thinking materialistically, we would think that a four-armed form is more powerful than a two-armed form because he has four arms, more than two. Four is more than two. But actually, tava shomyam janardana, Krishna Arjuna says, I want to see that form of yours, that two-armed form. After I've seen the forearm form, I want to see the two-arm form, which is your beautiful form. I want to see that form, which is so rare and so difficult to obtain, to see. Here is the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This chapter describes... Oops. This chapter relates how Brahma, although maintaining a mood of reverence, immersed himself in the great ocean of Krishna's sweetness. After praising Sri Krishna with great devotion mixed with knowledge, Brahma asked some questions. So this will come later. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, I am not afraid of the real devotees who are relishing great bliss by collecting loads of jewels, mock my stance of selling jewels, offering a few jewels by my comments here. Meditating with determination solely upon the lotus feet of my guru, my heart desires to cross the ocean of Brahma's prayers. In other words, this ocean is very, very, very deep. And by the mercy of his spiritual master, he will now cross and distribute some of the jewels which are Brahma's prayers. Some jewels, there are unlimited jewels in here. Jewels of realizations. Now, if we could take some of these jewels and make them our own, we are very fortunate. He continues. Now Brahma has directly realized that Nandanandana is the source of all forms of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, because all the Vishnu forms were composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But he, Krishna, is the source. Brahma, therefore, profusely praises the Lord. Brahma said, "My dear Vasudev, you are the source of countless forms, and you are the only worshipable Idya, Lord. You are glorified by everyone in the universe, from me down to the grass. In order to attain you, I offer these praises unto you." So in order to attain Krishna, we listen very carefully to Brahma's prayers and the comments of the Acharyas, because we want our consciousness to be influenced by their consciousness. Our consciousness perhaps is material, their consciousness is spiritual, it is full of realizations about Krishna. We want, through this entering our ears, to become influenced by them. Or simply, "I glorify you in this verse to please you." Because this is bhakti, the attempt to please Krishna. "Your transcendental body, dark blue like a fresh rain cloud, is wrapped in a garment more brilliant than lightning." Brahma's words describing Krishna suggest two things. Because Krishna's body is, what is it compared to? Rain cloud, dark blue like a rain cloud. So what? So the color is like a rain cloud, but now Vishwanath is going to give two other reasons why Krishna's body is compared to a rain cloud. "Describing Krishna suggests two things. The earth gets relief from the scorching heat of the summer through the cloud of Krishna's rain. And the Chataka bird, like devotees, sustain their lives with the mercy pouring from the rain cloud of Krishna." So in both senses, the rain cloud of Krishna's body can give one relief. Hearing about it, seeing it, glorifying Krishna's beautiful body can get relief from the scorching heat of the material world. It scorches the heart, and the more one attempts to enjoy, the more scorched one becomes, burnt, or in ISKCON terminology, fried. We get cooked, we get fried, we get toasted. There are so many ways. But Krishna, his transcendental body is compared to a cloud because it relieves all these distresses. And also the Chataka bird, the thunderbird, is a specific type of bird that only drinks water when the cloud rains down, and it won't drink from a well, from a lake, from an ocean, from a river, from a pond. It only will drink the water before it hits the ground even. So the Chataka bird is very thirsty all the time, because rain clouds don't come all the time. It's not that you can turn on the tap and make it rain. So the Chataka bird, when it sees a rain cloud, it is always chasing it to get its nourishment, to quench its thirsty desire. And sometimes, instead of getting rain from the cloud, what also comes from rain clouds? Thunderbolts, lightning bolts. But the Chataka bird has no choice. It has to follow the cloud to get its nourishment, its water. Sometimes it gets its nourishment, sometimes it gets a thunderbolt. But it has no choice. It simply has to follow the cloud and wait. And whatever mercy the cloud gives him, he has to accept. So, the Tathaka bird-like devotees sustain their lives with the mercy pouring from the rain cloud of Krishna. Because the devotees, they won't turn from Krishna regardless of whether they get the mercy that they are hoping for or a thunderbolt. Why? Because they can't take anything else. They can't take the water of this world. This is a devotee. They've made their choice. They've made their commitment. They have their taste. They don't want that of this world. And sometimes we may imagine that, I shall be a devotee and I shall only take Krishna consciousness. And then when the first rumble of the thunder comes, we go running for cover and take anything else, turn on the TV, do anything, put our heads under the blanket, look for some relief from the thunderbolt. But that attitude, of course, that lack of determination, lack of commitment, doesn't get us any true nourishment, any water, the water that we are longing for, actually. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur continues, saying that Brahma continues, Gunja berry earrings accent the beauty of your face. Flowers adorn your hair and a peacock feather rests atop your head. Brahma's description reveals the superiority of the lowly Gunja berry of Braja to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha. The forest garland of wild flowers and leaves around Krishna's neck is superior to those made by the Parijata flowers from Swagaloka. This is Vrindavan. This is Krishna revealing his most intimate dealings with his most intimate devotees, and everything there is especially designed, so to speak, to satisfy Krishna in the intimacies of his most confidential abode. So this is what Krishna likes. And when everything is a devotional offering that is infused with the unique flavor of the devotion of Braja, which is completely intimate, and it lacks the awe and reverence of Vaikuntha, we cannot imitate that. But yet, we should know that this is what is truly pleasing to Krishna. This is the conclusion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is no dham, tadhamam vrindavanam, ramyaka chit, upasana vraja vadu vagena vakalpita. There is no place like Vrindavan, and there is no mode of worship superior to the way the intensity and intimacy of love of the residents of Vrindavan. This is the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam Amalam Pramanam Prema Pramartamahan. And to achieve that love is the goal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Tamidam Idam Tatapitanapara. This is the conclusion of Mahaprabhu. And this is the line that we follow in. By mentioning the morsel of yogurt rice in Krishna's hand, his stick and horn, Brahma indicates the superiority of Krishna's cowherd boy form over all others. In mentioning Krishna's soft lotus feet, Mridupade, Brahma indicates that those wandering in the forest of Vrindavan become filled with ecstasy upon seeing Krishna's footprints. By stating that Krishna is the son of a cowherder, Pashupa Angajaya, Brahma shows the superior fortune of Nanda over Vasudeva. This is wonderful. Now Brahma continues. My dear Lord. So he's just described this beautiful, beautiful boy. My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me, and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. So why does Krishna appear to fulfill the desires of his pure devotees? Their separation, to relieve their pain of their separation. Sambhavam yatma mayaya. And here is Brahma speaking. He's saying that this form of Krishna is the most superior, this beautiful form, even though, again, he's a coward boy. He continues saying, although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, because he, again, possesses full knowledge. Even though my mind is not tinged by anything material, I cannot understand your personal form. It is beyond my comprehension, he's saying. It is small. It is boyish. It is dressed in this forest way. But I cannot conceive, even though I am transcendental, beyond the material world, I cannot conceive of how potent your form is. How powerful it is. It is inconceivably powerful. So if I cannot understand your form, how then, Brahma says, can I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? So Brahma possesses unlimited knowledge, practically speaking, and is not at all tinged by the material world, still is confounded when presented with the beautiful, powerful, and full of bliss form of Krishna. Here is Prabhupada's purport. So this is Brahma's words, and we should allow them to enter our ear and hear how wonderful Krishna is. Purport. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 1, Chapter 14, Srila Prabhupada explains that in the present verse, Lord Brahma expressed the following prayerful sentiment. Your appearance as a coward child is for the benefit of the devotees. And although I have committed offenses at your lotus feet by stealing away your cows, boys, and calves, I can understand that you are now showing me your mercy. That is your transcendental quality. You are very affectionate towards your devotees. Yet in spite of your affection for me, I cannot estimate the potency of your bodily activities. It is to be understood that when I, Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of this universe, cannot estimate the childlike body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what to speak of others understanding him? And if I cannot estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? Because Brahma has been watching Krishna dealing with the cowherd boys and wandering around herding the cows and the calves, barefoot, playing, sitting in a circle, enjoying a picnic, playing, killing this demon, killing Agasura, wandering around playing his flute. And one might think, oh, I've seen this kind of thing before. Anyone who goes to a village in India will see boys herding the cows with their sticks and possibly buffalo horns and flutes. and they're playing like boys play, and they jump in the Yamuna, and they enjoy themselves. But Brahma is telling us in his glorification of Krishna that I cannot estimate the power of your body, what to speak of the happiness that you attain by performing these transcendental pastimes with your intimate devotees. I cannot fathom it in the slightest bit. Therefore, this is continuing quoting Prabhupada from the Krishna book, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, and this will give us a hint of the potency of these pastimes of Krishna. As said in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who can understand a little of the transcendental pastimes, appearance and disappearance of the Lord, immediately becomes eligible to enter the kingdom of God after quitting the material body. Janma karma sume divyam evam yogati tatvata tatvadayam puna janma naiti mameti suajana. Material life finished. This statement is confirmed in the Vedas, and it is stated simply by understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can overcome the chain of repeated birth and death. I therefore recommend that people should not try to understand you by their speculative knowledge. And this points to the theme that's going to run through these first 8 verses. That no one by their own power can understand Krishna. But I don't want to get too far ahead. But he's saying here, don't take to the path of speculative knowledge or jnana to understand Krishna, because he's too far beyond anyone's ability or capacity to understand. There's a different methodology to understand Bhagavat Tattva. And that, of course, is devotion. Bhakti Yoga, devotional service. We'll skip this short paragraph and go on to the next one. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna's transcendental body can also function through the agency of his plenary expansions called Vishnu Tattva. So this is giving us a glimpse of Krishna's transcendental body and what we mean when we say that Krishna is all-powerful and all-potent. This is taking one aspect. So Krishna can act through his expansions, the Vishnu Tattva expansions. Purport continues, as stated by Brahma himself in the Brahma Samhita, Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. This verse indicates that not only the Lord can perform any bodily function with any of his limbs, but also so he can see with his hands, he can taste with his ears. So this is the interchangeability of Krishna's potent body. Everything is so potent. Can we eat with our eyes? Almost, but not quite. Sometimes when we look at some prasadam, we can almost taste it. It's so good. Yes? Or sometimes you smell some prasadam, and you can almost taste it. You can almost see what it looks like too. Our senses are not interchangeable, but the hint is there, how they are interchangeable. Or sometimes, it's true, isn't it, that when we smell something, our mouth starts watering like we were tasting it, or if we see something that's really, really tasty. So this verse indicates that not only the Lord can perform any bodily functions with any of his limbs, but also he can see through the eyes of his Vishnu expansions, or indeed through the eyes of any living entity. And similarly, that he can hear through the ears of any Vishnu or Jiva expansion. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura points out that although the Lord can perform any function with any of his senses, in his transcendental pastimes of Sri Krishna, he generally sees with his eyes, touches with his hands, hears with his ears, and so on. Thus he behaves like the most beautiful and charming young cowherd boy. Why? Because he's performing these pastimes of Vrindavan. And this enhances the ecstasy of all the devotees who are relating to him. Because if he performs incredible, miraculous activities all the time, that will bring out everyone's reverence of him, which stifles the intimacy of the love. Because if you're aware of your friend's great power, you're always thinking, naturally you must think of that power. And then your relationship with him, the loving intimacy, familiar intimacy, is diminished. Thus he behaves like the most beautiful and charming young cowherd boy. The Vedic knowledge expands from Lord Brahma, who is described in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam's Adi Kavi, the primeval Vedic scholar. Yet Brahma could not understand the transcendental body of Lord Krishna because it is beyond the reach of ordinary Vedic knowledge. So we're supposed to get the hint here that if Brahma can't understand with his own power and his own energy, what to speak of little insignificant us? That is the hint that we are supposed to pick up and take very dearly. That we don't, by our own potency, have the power to understand Krishna. But Krishna can be understood, as we saw here, but it's by a different process. Amongst all the transcendental forms of the Lord, the two-armed form of Govinda, Krishna is original and supreme. Thus Lord Govinda's pastime of stealing butter, drinking the gopis' breast milk, tending the calves, playing his flute, and playing childhood sports are extraordinary, even in comparison with the activities of Lord Vishnu's expansions. So that's a second important point here. That Krishna's pastimes are all extraordinary. Within the word extraordinary is the word ordinary. They are not ordinary. They are not like we project our own consciousness upon Krishna. They are not like that. They're extraordinary, even though they seem in some senses to mimic the activities of human beings. They are not done by the same motivating force that would motivate a human being to perform these activities. This is the conclusions that Brahma is realizing. There's so much difference between your body. I cannot estimate the potency of your body, and therefore I cannot estimate the potency, begin to estimate the potency of your pastimes and what is actually going on, what is motivating them. And the bliss, the transcendental happiness you are experiencing by these loving exchanges with your devotees, they are beyond my power to understand. Text 3. So does that mean because Brahma cannot understand that no one can understand? Brahma is going to explain in text 3 the actual power of understanding, which is a very important verse that was quoted or spoken by Ramananda Roy to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And before this point, Ramananda Roy was speaking verses about what the essence of the process of understanding Krishna is, or the highest knowledge. Before this verse, Mahaprabhu was always saying, "Iha baya," these are external. But when he said this verse, Ramananda Roy said this verse, Mahaprabhu said, "Yes, this is true. This is acceptable. This is the process of understanding the highest truth, Krishna, in Vrindavan." And what is that? Jnane prayasam muropastanamanteva
Jivanti san mukaritam bhavadiyavatam stenestita sudagatam tanovan manobir ye priyaso jito jito pyasitas tilokyam.
Those who, this is again, those who can, this is the process. There are two verses in this section that describe the process by which we can become realized in Vrindavan. This is one of them, and it's very important. Please listen. Those who, even when, while remaining situated in their established social positions, so everyone, if they just stay in their position and throw away the process of speculative knowledge and get rid of the tendency that Brahma is saying is far insufficient, which is the tendency to try to understand Krishna's position by our own power. And, so the first thing is stay in position. Second, throw away this other process of trying with your own intelligence to understand Krishna. And with body, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees. So here, Krishna Katha, because it comes from Krishna and Krishna's own mouth in the case of the Bhagavad Gita. And the Katha of Krishna, spoken by Krishna's pure devotees. Such persons who dedicate their lives to these narrations, that means they take it extremely seriously. They don't think that this is something that can be given up in any way. They dedicated their lives to these narrations. They certainly conquer your lordship, because Brahma couldn't conquer Krishna. With his intelligence fell far short of understanding Krishna, those pastimes, those activities. But jito jito pyasita trilokyam, that this unconquerable Lord becomes conquered. So if one follows this process of staying in one's position, giving up the tendency towards understand Krishna by one's own intellectual prowess, and just hear Krishna Katha, then, although you are unconquerable by anyone in the three worlds, and Brahma knows that he's the most powerful person within this world, but still you will be conquered by such a person who takes to this path. And Mahaprabhu said, very good, yes. This is the process of Krishna consciousness, when he heard this verse. Here's the purport here. Here the word uropasya clearly indicates that one should not even slightly endeavor to understand the absolute truth by the process of mental speculation. For it invariably carries one to an imperfect, impersonal understanding of God. The word jivanti indicates that a devotee who always hears about Lord Krishna will go back home, back to Godhead. This has also been described in the first canto, Srinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam Ridyantasto Yavadrani Vidunoti Suritsitam, that Krishna, if one becomes eager to hear about Krishna and hear the glorification of Krishna, that Krishna himself from within the heart, he removes the inauspiciousness that has come, that we all carry with us. That means the modes of passion and ignorance. He removes all the abhadrani from within the heart of the living entity who are eager to hear. So the same point is being made here. Jivanti indicates that a devotee who always hears about Krishna will go back home, back to Godhead. Even if he can do nothing except maintain his existence and hear topics concerning the Lord. Srila Sanatana Goswami has explained the word Tanovan Manobir by the body, mind, excuse me, body, words, and mind in three ways. So everyone should, with their, for devotees, in reference to devotees, through their body, words, and mind, they are able to conquer Lord Krishna. Thus becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness, they can touch his lotus feet with their hands, call him to come with their words. So this is how they conquer Krishna. They touch his lotus feet with their body, mind, and words. And they call him to come with their words and attain his direct audience within their mind simply by thinking about him. This is the devotees. But it also refers to, in the case of non-devotees, the word Tanuvan Manobhya refers to the word Ajita, unconquered, and indicates that those not engaged in the loving service of Lord Krishna cannot conquer the Absolute Truth by their bodily strength, by their verbal expertise, or their mental power. Despite all their endeavors, the ultimate truth remains beyond their reach. So this is hinting at the process. We're talking about directly the process. In the reference to the word jita, conquered, the word tanovan manobir indicates that the pure devotees of Lord Krishna conquer his body, words, and mind. Lord Krishna's body is conquered because he always remains by the side of his pure devotee. Krishna becomes conquered. His body becomes conquered. Lord Krishna's words are conquered because he always chants the glories of his devotees. And Lord Krishna's mind is conquered because he always thinks about his loving devotees. So how does this conquering take place? What is the verse said? Although the unconquerable, he is unconquerable, jito jiti pyas trilokyam. How is the unconquerable Ajita Lord conquered? By hearing about him, by hearing Krishna Katha, giving up, don't try to conquer him by your own power, but just hear about him again and again and again, and he will do the rest. And he becomes conquered. And just think about the description of how Krishna has becomes conquered. How wonderful it is. He always stays by his devotee's side. This is Krishna, the Supreme Lord. With his words, he glorifies his devotees. There are so many examples of that in the Bhagavatam. And he always, with his mind, thinks about his loving devotees. Ambarish Maharaj, when it describes how Durvasa Muni, when he went to Lord Vishnu for protection, Lord Narayan for protection, the Lord said, the devotees are in my heart, and I am in the devotee's heart. We'll continue with this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has elaborately explained the words Tanu Van Manobhyo. What does Tanu Van Manobhyo mean? Mind, body, words. Or body, words, and mind in that order. In regard, he has them describing the word Namantaha, offering obeisances. He explains that the devotees, modifying the word namanta, offering obeisances. He explains that the devotees can take full advantage of the transcendental topics of the Lord by offering all respects to those topics with their body, words, and mind. Now, how do we offer respects to the topics with the body, words, and mind? One should engage his body by touching the ground with his hands and head while offering obeisances to the topics of the Lord. One should engage his words by praising transcendental literatures such as Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam as well as the devotees who are preaching such literatures. And one should engage his mind by feeling great reverence and pleasure while hearing the transcendental topics of the Lord. In this way, a sincere devotee who has acquired even a small amount of transcendental knowledge about Lord Krishna can conquer him and thus go back home, back to Godhead, for eternal life at the Lord's side. Okay. These prayers are, they have two nice. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Here? Before?
Yeah.
Yes, he definitely challenged.
But then he got something.
He challenged Krishna and he was defeated, and he accepted his defeat and became humbled, and that caused Krishna to benedict him. But Krishna had already benedicted him. He just displayed so much power that Brahma felt insignificant, like a fly in the before an elephant. He challenged Krishna. He's feeling his offense. Because Brahma made the attempt to separate Krishna from his devotees. The calves and the boys.
So it seems like he did something that on his level, before he was planning to do it, he didn't think it was a big thing. It was like a little trick. He was being clever. But the consequences of his cleverness from the point of view of Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's pleasure had a different
significance. Yes. Yeah, because you could think, what offense? He did something innocent. But he's going to, we'll talk about this later perhaps, he thinks it wasn't an offense, but because he surrenders to Krishna, something wonderful comes out of it. Thank you. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
You mentioned something about speculation.
Don't try to. Coming from,
speculation in the sense of thinking the story is not actually something else.
No, what he's talking about is don't try to understand. Give up the process of trying to understand the Supreme Lord by your own power. That's what he's specifically talking about. Because at best you will come up with an impersonal understanding. You won't be able to understand Krishna. You won't be able to understand Krishna, his transcendental body, his transcendental pastimes. You'll just see your own mind. He knows, he's tried. And he's the best of speculators, the most intelligent person. And he's failed miserably. But his strength, his blessing is that now he's giving us advice. Give this process up to understand God in this way. Take another process. And the process that he set it there by hearing, and hearing as we comes up in the next text, is devotional service. It's bhakti. So take up bhakti, give up jnana. Process of Jnana Yoga. What's the point? If you want to understand the absolute truth, you will understand it when he chooses to reveal himself to you. You cannot storm the gates of heaven. You cannot understand Krishna by your own power. We don't have the capacity. We're too little. That's the idea.
When you say give up jnana, does that mean, like, when you think of jnana yoga, you think of knowledge that comes down?
That's not jnana yoga.
So when you say jnana, you mean like just making up anything?
No, that's not jnana yoga either. Means in us, it's by being detached from the material world and by your own meditation, neti, 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 giving up, it's described in the third canto, in the Kapila Muni's teaching, the part of Sankhya Yoga, that is, you deal with the material universe, you disassemble the material universe, you see neti, neti, neti. Is there a cow living in a cow rented one of the rooms in the house over there or something?
No.
Yeah. Oh, no, it isn't. That's a kookaburra, not a peacock. Not Vrindavan. Had me fooled there for a minute. Jnana Yoga is a specific process of meditation by which one tries to separate oneself from matter through meditation and giving up all material engagement. It's a specific process, and it's an ascending process. It's not just thinking, but it also includes here, in this sense, logic, because there's the Nyaya school that one will, or you could take it, science. Scientists, they're trying to understand God, so they say, oh, you say he's in every atom? Okay, we're going to make this huge atom smasher in the cyclotron or something like that. And they just take these atomic particles and speed them up through electromagnetic forces and speed them up faster and faster, and then they stick an atom there or another particle and they whack. So you say God's in the atom? Okay, now we'll see. Boom. No, he's not there. And then we'll try again. And then they take one of the particles and they take a small particle. Nope. Can't find them. There's quarks and gluons and this and that. But no, we haven't seen God. But that isn't the process. Using the scientific method, which ultimately is limited to your own potency, your own power of intelligence and eyes. Because the scientists, scientists who use that methodology to find out the highest truth, the greatest truth, they cannot see him. At best, they come up with an impersonal, that's what they come up with nowadays, actually. They come up with a very zenny type of understanding. But they can't see him anywhere. That was what Kunti Devi said. How can we understand you? Bahiranta vastita. You're inside and outside of everything, but how can we understand you? So, contrast the devotees, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, they see Krishna everywhere. And then contrast that with the non-devotees, they don't see him anywhere. Because they're only seeing their own minds, because their minds are devoid of Krishna consciousness, devotion. They cannot see him anywhere, and because the exalted Paramahamsas have so much devotion, they see him everywhere.
And they see him for the process of hearing about him.
Because it's hearing about him is devotion. They see him through devotion. You're catching the devotion of the katha. And we're hearing Brahma's devotion. And if we allow that to simply, in a simple way, enter our ears and into our mind, then that's so purifying, creates a change. We're hearing Prabhupada's devotion. We're hearing Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's devotion. We're hearing Sanatana Goswami's devotion. And the devotees of Prabhupada. Okay, we should stop now. Shrima Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.
Thank you.